Morning. Today's daf is Memtes in Shabbos. Up to page 49. The Gemara from yesterday went off on a bit of a tangent as the Gemara went through Mishnayos in Masechtas Uksin, a couple of Mishnayos from Kalim, where we went through the discussion of a chibur, of what is considered a connection. Even though something is temporarily connected with one another, but because the plan is to detach the two from one another, so are they connected? This question has ramifications in the world of Tumah, where if we know that if a kli becomes Tumah, the entirety of the kli becomes Tumah. What if I have a kli that's really made up of two components? So and we were to view them as two separate entities, so we would know that if one kli becomes Tumah, the other one does not become Tumah. Ain kli metame kli. So the question is when I have two disjointed kalim that are combined together, that are linked together, so is it considered one kli or is it considered two separate kalim? So there was a bit of a discrepancy between the Mishnah Uksin and the Mishnah Kalim. We went through the discrepancy yesterday. We advanced the Gemara advanced a suggestion in terms of how to understand the discrepancy. That is what we've been covering over the course of yesterday. That is a digression from the main topic of the parak. The fourth parak of Shabbos, which we started yesterday, is a discussion of hatmana, of insulating food. You're not allowed to insulate food before Shabbos with something that will add heat. You are allowed before Shabbos to insulate food with something that will simply preserve the heat. On Shabbos itself, you're not allowed to do insulation at all. That is the basics of the Perek of Bametomnin. We are going to come back a little bit later on this morning to come back to the main topic of discussion. In the meantime, however, we are going to learn a Braisa, Tanur Rabbanan. We're in Mem Ches Amud Beis. We're about 8 lines from the bottom of the Amud. And we are continuing along the lines of yesterday's discussion. Maspor shal parakim. Let's say I have a scissors made up of two pieces. In other words, what we would call a pair of scissors. Okay, a pair of scissors would be, it's two blades, and they're connected with one another. Sometimes they're screwed together, sometimes they're just kind of latched one onto the other. But anyway, that's what we're discussing. The zemel shal v'hitni, now the plane of the carpenter. Now, I'm not a carpenter, I don't know what the plane looks like. But again, though, I understand that from the context of this discussion, it's made up of two segments. It has a blade and it's another piece attached to it. So now the question becomes as follows. Let's use the scissors because it's a better visual for all of us. We all understand what a pair of scissors look like. The Gemara's question is very simple. When the scissors are connected to one another, so how do I count it? Do I count it as one kli or do I count it as two separate kalim? So the Braisa over here tells us exactly how to view it. Chibur l'tuma. So they're connected. So in other words, if one of the blades of the scissors becomes tameh, the other blade becomes tameh as well, meaning we look at the scissor as one entity. Fine, but then the next statement of the Braisa is only going to confuse us. Ein chibur lahaza. But when I want to sprinkle the paraduma on the scissors, so they're not viewed as connected, and therefore a sprinkling of the paraduma must go onto both blades. Okay. Now, obviously, we would like consistency over here. The Gemara is going to make this point. This is not me talking. I'm just foreshadowing the Gemara coming up. We would like consistency over here. We would like to know, well, are they connected or are they not connected? And whatever would be true by Tumah should be true by Hazah. And whatever would be true by Hazah should be true by Tumah. Now, one thing I'm just going to make clear, Hazah, the sprinkling, is that how I'm mitahir a kli? And the answer is yes. Oh, you can break it. But the answer is yes. Sometimes you do need Hazah. You need sprinkling. Meaning, if it becomes tummy through just a regular tumma, so I tovel on the mikvah, wait until nightfall, and that'll be it. No, scissors. We're talking about a pair of scissors.
No,
oh. So but if the scissors were to come into contact with the tumas mace, so then the only way to be mitayer from tumas mace is through the paraduma. That's true for people. It's also true for items as well, for objects as well. So this pair of scissors, now what we're saying is that when it comes to tumma, in order to contract the tumma, so it's viewed as one entity. So if one blade becomes tumma, the other blade becomes tumma as well. But in terms of hazah, I must make sure that when I sprinkle the water from the paraduma, so that water has to make contact with both blades. So is it one or is it two? It's unclear right now. So the ein chibur hazah, manav shach, and the Gemara now just jumps right into the question. Good. The Gemara asks, so let's be consistent. So Amarava, so Rav explains like this, Dvar Torah. So Rav explains to you, here's how it works. Min HaTorah, Dvar Torah over here, simply means, this is the rules Min HaTorah. Dvar Torah. B'sham Malach HaChibor, Bein LaTumah, Bein LaHazah, Okay, good. Now we have the ground rules. The ground rules is that the scissors is viewed as one entity while you're using the scissors. So during use, it's one entity. And it makes perfect sense, meaning because when you're using them, the two blades need one another. That's how a pair of scissors work. And so therefore, they're viewed as one entity. When I put the scissors down, even though they're physically connected, but halachically, they're disjointed. They are now two separate entities. So it's going to make all the difference in the world when we're talking about these scissors, when I'm actually cutting or when I put them down. So the Gemara says, so now, imagine how confusing it's going to be. Meaning, as I'm cutting with the scissors, it's one entity. When I put it down, they're two separate entities. So what the Chachamim essentially did is, let's err now on the side of caution. Meaning, because sometimes it's a hybrid. Sometimes it's one entity, sometimes it's two entities. So vis-a-vis Tuma, we're going to err on the side of caution. We're going to say, we're always going to view it like one entity. And therefore, it's always going to become Tame, even after it's put down. Okay, and the reason why you can understand. Why do the rabbis make such a gzera? It's very simple. Because there's a fine line between me putting the scissors down and then me picking them up and getting and using them to cut again. So, and that fine line, people are not going to be able to see clearly that fine line. And so therefore, the Chachamim said, let's just err on the side of caution. And for vis-a-vis Tumah, we're going to say it's always considered as one entity. And vis-a-vis Tahara, same story. We're going to err on the side of caution. Meaning because in order to do a proper Hazah, while I'm cutting, if I sprinkled while I'm cutting, which is strange, but if I sprinkled it while I was cutting, so then I would only have to come into contact with one of the blades. If I sprinkled the paraduma on it when it's down, I need to have it cover both of the blades. So let's just err on the side of caution, and let's just always say that it's going to always require hazah on both blades. The Gazra Rabbanan, the Gemara makes this point, we're now on the top of Mem Tes Amud Aleph, the Gazra Rabbanan al Tumah Shelo B'Shas Malacha Mishum Tumah Shebishas Malacha, V'al Hazah Shebishas Malacha Mishum Hazah Shelo B'Shas Malacha. Good. And now that gives us a good understanding of the Tosefta regarding the scissors. How do I view them as one entity, as two? So the answer is, it's both. It's one entity and it's two entities. And because it's both, the Chachamim always played it safe. And they said that for Tumah, we're always going to view it as one entity. For Tahara, we're always going to view it as two entities.
The thing is, the analogy of a scissor doesn't really compare it to a kira with an attachment. You know, with the scissors.
Yes, correct.
Two blades are what make the scissors.
Correct.
If you take one away, you don't have the scissors. Just
agreed.
One blade.
Yeah, the Gemara, it's a very good point.
Off and forget it doesn't matter. It's stuff that
you right. And good. And it's interesting because the Gemara didn't compare this to the previous case. I mean, the Gemara, this is a self-standing discussion. So it's a fair point. I'll tell you what I was wondering. It's not me, it's Tosfos, but I thought of this on my own, being that we only did the Gemara 5 days ago. So it's in my window of memory. But remember, we had the Mukhti discussion just a while ago, back on Shabbos, where we talked about the wagon, we talked about the detachable wheel. And the Gemara over there did not raise any issue of whether it's connected or whether it's not a connection. In fact, the assumption over there is that it's not connected. In other words, the Mishnah says regarding the wheel of the wagon, which is detachable, even while it's connected, it's not connected. So somehow you're going to have to make some sort of distinction between our discussion of the scissors and the wheel, which the Gemara assumes is not connected. Now, I certainly need the wheel on the wagon. Wagon's not getting that far without the wheel, but because it's detachable, it's not connected. And here, the scissors, the Gemara assumes, of course, they're connected. Okay, and Tosfos to that, look, at, you could, it's just one line of Tosfos. Tema, Maishna, Mimuchni. How is this different than the case of the wagon and the wheel? The Amr Bizmanshi Nishmetas, the Eino Chibur. Where because the wheel is detachable, so therefore, even while on the wagon, it's not connected. Vitzarech Lechalik, and Tosfos just ends off by saying, you have to make some sort of distinction. But Tosfos says, but that's your job now. Your job is to figure out some sort of distinction. Let's go back to the Gemara. We go on in the Gemara. We're on Mem Tes Amud Aleph. We are at the two dots, four lines from the top. Bizman Shein Lachin. Now, the Mishnah had a list of five and four items. Five items which give off an internal heat, and so therefore you cannot do Hatmana with these items before Shabbos. Whether they're dry or whether they're wet, right? The grape pulp, the olive pulp, manure, salt, limestone, sand. So these all give off an internal heat source. and you can't do hatmana. And then the Mishnah gave a list of four things: tevin, straw, the skins of the grape, cotton, and grass, where they are only going to give off an internal heat source only when they're moist, but not when they're dry. Once they're dry, so they don't give off an internal heat source, and therefore you could do hatmana with these dry items. Now, when we say they're wet, so what kind of wet are we talking about? It's an organic wet, or even if it's a artificial wet. Artificial meaning I hydrated them myself. E bailu. This is the Gemara's question. Lachim achmat atzman, odim lachmas machmat davar acher. So straw. We said that wet straw. Does that mean that it's wet because they're fresh right off the ground? Or does that mean that I picked the straw, but then I hydrated the straw, I threw some water on it? So what's the qualification of wet? So Tashma, the Gemara says, come in here, lo b'tevim, v'lo b'zagim, v'lo b'muchim, v'lo b'asavim. So the Gemara says here, look, the analysis is very simple. Take a look at the four items mentioned in the Mishnah. So b'zman she'in lachin, only when these items are wet. Now, all of these four items, one of them is muchin. Now, muchin is, again, as Rashi mentioned in the Mishnah, anything soft. It could be talking about cotton, it could be talking about wool. But right now, let's assume it's talking about wool. Tufts of wool that I just cut right off the sheep. Now, how are you going to get the wool wet? So there's no internal liquid of the sheep, at least right now assumes the Gemara. So it must mean that I shear the wool off and I added water. That's what the Mishnah must mean. Where do I find wool that has its own internal liquid? So the Gemara says, sure, mimarta debeni atme. So let's imagine, or let's not, but let's imagine we're talking about wool straight from the armpit of the sheep. Okay, so in other words, and the liquid over there, of course, is the sweat of the sheep. So there, if I take that wool, okay, not the greatest visual, but if I take that wool has an internal liquid, and so maybe that's the wool that the Mishnah was describing. So the Gemara says, what about the Braisa that describes ksus is clothing, wet clothing? So ksus lacha machmas asahech mishkachala, and again, where does wet clothing have an internal liquid to it? And again, mimarta debeni atme. Again, the Gemara says that if you get the clothing from the armpit, where there's zaya, where there's sweat over there, so then that would be considered an internal liquid, and maybe that's what the Mishnah and the Braisa are describing. So the question was asked, when we say that it's liquid, does it mean wet on its own, an internal liquid, or does it mean wet even if it's applied from the outside? And to that, the Gemara leaves that question unanswered. Tomnin biksus uveperos, Bechanfei Yona, Unisor Shal Charashim, Unar Shal Pishtan, Daka. And now the Mishnah gives us a list of things that you can do Hatmana with, and included in this list are clothing, fruit, feathers of a dove, sawdust, and Unar Shal Pishtan, and flax, right? Strands of flax. Unar Shal Pishtan, Daka. Fine flax. Rav Yehuda says the fine flax, no. Apparently he feels that the fine flax gives off an internal heat. But if they're thick flax, so then that would be fine. That would be okay. Good. So in other words, so good. So the Mishnah is very straightforward. A list of things which do not give an internal heat, are not something which is mosif hevel, and so therefore you could do a hatmana with all these items before Shabbos. Amar Rabbi Yannai, okay, famous Gemara coming up. I mean, it's all famous, but this one is more popular. Amar Rabbi Yannai. Now, this Gemara really has nothing to do with the Mishnah, other than the fact that the Mishnah just spoke about the feathers of a dove, so the Gemara over here digresses. Tfilin Tzrichin Gufnaki. If you're going to wear your tefillin, so you need a gufnaki, you need a clean body. Ke Elisha ba'al kenafayim. And the Gemara gives an example of Elisha ba'al kenafayim, meaning a particular Tana, which we're going to read more about in just a moment, who had a gufnaki. And now, what's the connection between this and the Mishnah that we just went through? And the answer is, it's a loose connection. Meaning the Mishnah mentioned that one of the things that you could do atmana with is kanfeyona. Oh, kanfeyona? The Gemara just, I have something to add about Kanfei Yonah. Elisha Baal Kanafayim, that is the name of the Tana. Now, obviously, Baal Kanafayim is a nickname. And now the Gemara is going to explain to us how he got this nickname of Elisha Baal Kanafayim. Now, before we get to Elisha Baal Kanafayim, the Gemara explains to us, what does that mean, Gufnaki? You have to have a clean body. What does a clean body mean? What is the requirements of wearing tefillin? So the Gemara says either one of two things, shelo yafiach behem. So either you can't pass gas while you're wearing tefillin, that's what it means to have a gufnaki. And Rav explains shelo yishan behem, that you don't sleep with that. Now if you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi says, and what's the problem with sleeping with tefillin? Meaning, is there something per se wrong with sleeping while wearing tefillin? Rashi says, shema yafiach or yire keri. Well, the problem is that maybe while you're sleeping, you're either going to pass gas or you'll have nocturnal emission. He says, but where Rava disagrees with Abaye is that Rava's of the belief that while you're awake, there's no problem. It's easy to control any type of gas that you have in your body, and so therefore his only concern is that perhaps you'll sleep, and then once you sleep, then you will lose control, and then you'll perhaps pass gas. But basically, I mean, it certainly seems from Rashi that the explanations of Abaye and Rava over here are very similar to one another. Okay, so that's the problem with wearing tefillin, and that's why there's a need to have a clean body. Now, let's just go through the Gemara, and then I'll come back and I'll discuss some talking points over here. Why is he referred to as Baal Kanafayim? Where did he get that nickname from? Shempam Achas. Gzera Machus Rami Arashah Gzera Yisrael Shekol Aminich Tfilin Yenakur Ismocha. So the Jewish people during the Roman rule were suffering another Roman decree. And this Roman decree demanded that anyone who is caught wearing tefillin publicly, Yenakur Ismocha, will have his skull pecked at. Okay, an allusion to an extraordinarily gruesome way to die. V'haya Elisha Menicham. Now Elisha would be wearing his tefillin knowing the gzera and knowing the penalty. Sanhedrin, who discusses it over there? All the Rishonim, but we just went through this recently. Right in the 8th parak of Sanhedrin, where the Gemara has a discussion of what are you supposed to give up your life for, right, for the Torah. Right, correct. So Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shfichas Damim, those are the big three. Those are the things that you are not supposed to give up. That you are supposed to give up your life for. But normally the default position, of course, is V'chai Bahem, that life is paramount. And even at the expense of Yisurim in the Torah, you violate Yisurim in the Torah if it means that you could save your life. Right, we'll be talking over the course of Masechta Shabbos that you're allowed to violate Shabbos to save a person's life, your life, somebody else's life. But in the meantime, however, the Rishonim over there discuss what was Elisha's justification, where over here he clearly was putting his life into his hands at what expense of putting on tefillin. So the Rishonim over there struggle with what right did he have to wear tefillin, even though it might mean that he's giving up his life. And some like Ben suggested, like some Rishonim say, well, that's just mitzvah lo saaseh, but when it comes to a positive commandment, the positive commandments are different. Okay. Anyway, that's an important point, which I'm glossing over, but I'm admitting that I'm glossing over. But it's an important point. So Elisha minicham yotzei l'shuk, and he goes out to the marketplace. Ra'u kazdor echad ratz mipana v'ratz acharv. So he sees a Roman officer, and now he realizes he's in trouble because he's wearing tefillin. So he's running and he's running, right? You understand? You can paint the scene in your head. V'kevin shegiya slow, but Elisha Baal Kanafayim, as spiritual as a man he wasn't fast. The Roman caught up with him. Not la meroshav achsa biyado. So, but before the Roman was able to catch up to him, so he took the tefillin, he quickly grabbed them off his head, and he cupped them in his hands. Amar lo mazeh biyadecha. The Roman says, what do you have in your hand? Amar lo kanfei yonah. So he says, what do you mean? Wings of a dove. Pashut es yadov nimtzu kanfei yonah. Opened up his hands, and that's exactly what was in his hands. Kanfei Yonah, obviously a nace that took place on behalf of Elisha Baal Kanafayim. Lafikha Karnos Elisha Baal Kanafayim, and that's how he got the name as a result of this miracle. Umaishna Kanfeyona, now why specifically Kanfeyona? Mishar Ofos, Mishum de Imtel Kinesi Susal La Yona. Because you know that the Jewish people are compared to Yona, Shinema Kanfeyona Nechba Bekasef. Gemara quotes the Pasuk in Tehillim, Ma Yona Chnafe Meginas Aleha. What protects the Yona is its wings, Af Yisrael, Mitzvos Meginas Aleim, so to the Jewish people. Our mitzvahs are our wings. That what is what provides us our protection. Okay, and now a number of points to discuss over here. I'm going to primarily focus on Tosus over here on the daf. First of all, the Gemara's launching point to this whole story was, you know, that when you wear your tefillin, you need gufnaki, you need a clean body, and the Gemara says, and you know, like whom? Like Elisha Baal Kanafayim. Now the story with Elisha Baal Kanafayim is an amazing story, but no point in the story does it actually mention that he had gufnaki. Meaning, the whole reason why we brought it in is because, oh, you know, just like him, he had a gufnaki. But we never actually see that in the story. So the first point that Tosfos makes, I'm on the third Tosfos on the Amud, Lahachi Nakat Elisha, Demistam Akim Shanasal, Nes Betfilin, Hayazar Behen, Vahayalo Gufnaki. So Tosfos says you got to use a little bit of deductive reasoning. In other words, we'll just simply work backwards. Because we saw such a great miracle happen to Elisha Baal Kanafayim, now we'll work backwards and we'll say, it must be that he was especially careful about the way he comported himself while wearing the tefillin. Now, umizeh tami inanu yachom li pater, sharei bezeh yachom li yizahir. And then Tosfos says cryptically, now this is not going to be a good excuse. Meaning, let's say a person will say, look, I'd love to wear tefillin today, but gufnaki, you got to have a clean body. And I can't do it, I can't manage. Mm. So Tosfos right away says, it's not going to be a good enough excuse. Meaning that we don't put on tefillin the whole day. Back in the good old days, they did. We don't put on the tefillin all day. We acknowledge that for us to have a gufnaki would be impossible for the duration of the whole day. But to put the tefillin a little bit on in the morning, for that we can have a gufnaki. It's minhag Yisrael now that although the mitzvah of tefillin is really the whole day, but we only put it on in the morning. And part of the explanation for that is basically our discussion right now, because it's impossible for us to have a gufnaki over the duration of the entire day. But still, you should put it on for part of the day. For that little bit that we put it on, a person can be careful. Now, interesting discussion coming up in Tosfos right now. The Ein Tema Amashim Mitzvah Zeh Refuya Biyadeinu. Now, look around, says Tosfos. Now, I'm not talking 21st century America, right? I'm reading Tosfos. We are talking now 12th century, 13th century France and Germany. And Tosfos says, if you look around, you'll see that the mitzvah of tefillin is refuya biyadeinu. We're lax in the mitzvah of tefillin. And he's going to give an interesting explanation in terms of why we're lax. Now, when he says we're lax, I don't know what he means by that. Meaning,
wear it all day.
Huh?
Maybe he means we don't wear it all day.
Maybe he means that people don't wear it all day. Maybe he's referring to more of a laxity than just that. Okay? But he says, I'm going to halachically explain to you why it is that we're lax in that, in this mitzvah. Shigami mechachamim aiser refuyi kiditanya beper gravelaza demila. And he says, and it's not a new phenomena that we're lax in this mitzvah. This goes back already to the, I have a Gemara that supports this as well. Rabbi Shimon ben Lazar Omer, kol mitzvah shalom masra atzman yisroel aleim b'shas gzeres amalkus, kigon tefillin, adayin hi refuyi biyadam. Because any mitzvah where there was not sacrifice for that mitzvah, so the mitzvah does not have a long carryover effect, right? It really is basic human psychology. That anything that we're really ready to exert energy and effort into and sacrifice over is something that is beloved to us. But if we're not prepared to put any energy into it or any sacrifice into it, so it's going to be weak. And he says, and by the way, our Gemara could lend support to this idea because of the Gzera Machus Romi, I mean, the Gemara can only point to one person who, in defiance of the enactment, actually wore tefillin. So, right, right. So you see that the general response was, "Oh, you're not allowed to wear tefillin." Okay, not allowed to wear tefillin. The Roman said it. The Hadarmin Berakam de Rosh Hashanah. Okay, and Tosfos goes on, but very interesting discussion within Tosfos over here about we scale back the mitzvah of tefillin. And why we scaled it back is because of our need for guf naki. But Tosfos says, but certainly part of the day, he's not very, very expressive about this, but certainly part of the day should be wearing tefillin. And again, as I mentioned earlier, minhag Yisrael is that we wear tefillin in the morning during Shacharis. Okay. Please see the rest of Tosfos. Tosfos over here has a discussion of a couple more Gemaras and a couple of Midrashim about the importance of wearing tefillin and the consequence of not wearing tefillin. Okay. Let's go now back to the Gemara. Let's continue with the next Mishnah. I'm sorry, not yet. But it's Sora Shel Charashin. One other point that needs to be clarified in the Mishnah. Now, in the Mishnah, we said that for these items, they are not Davar HaMosef Hevel, and therefore you could do Atmana. And then we know in the last line of the Mishnah, Rav Yehuda disagrees. He says that if it's a fine material, so that's not good, but if it's a coarse material, then it's fine. What was he commenting on? Not particularly clear from the Mishnah. Ibailu Rav Yehuda Nesor Shel Charashim Kai, is he talking about sawdust? Where fine sawdust is unacceptable, but if it's large chunks of sawdust, so that's okay. Oh, on Nesor Shel Pishtan Kai, is he talking about the flax? Tashma, the Gemara says, the Tanya Rav Yehuda Omer Nesor Shel Pishtan Daka Hariyei Kezevel, Shema Minah Nesor Shel Pishtan Kai Shema Minah. The Gemara quotes the Braisa, and the Braisa couldn't be any clearer. Rav Yehuda was arguing on the Nesor Shel Pishtan, where Rav Yehuda says that if it's the flax, a very fine flax broken up into very small bits, that's like zevel, that's like manure, which we already explained, is an internal source of heat. It's a davar hamosif hevel, and so therefore you cannot do hatmana with that at all. But if it's a coarse flax, that would be okay. So that's what Rav Yehuda is arguing about. Okay. Tomnim b'shlach u'metalton osa b'gizei, I'm sorry, u'metalton osan. Okay, more on the discussion of hatmana. The next Mishnah says that you could do hatmana with shlachim. Shlachim is hides of an animal. Okay, he quotes Targum, the first Rashi on the Mishnah, v'hivshit Targum vayishlach. Anytime the Torah describes the act of flaying, if you look at Targum right there in that pasuk in Chumash, so it says vayishlach, meaning the shlachim are the hides that are taken off the animal. Okay, shoes, handbags, you understand. So tomnim b'shlachim, so you can do hatmana with it. In other words, all the leather is going to do is it's going to preserve the heat, it's not going to add to the heat, and so there's no problem with doing hatmana with the hides. U'metalton osan, and furthermore, the hides are not muksa. Why are the hides not muksa? It's very simple, because they're usable. Meaning the hides back in the good old days was a cushion for the seat, a rug on the floor, meaning they had many uses on Shabbos. So if I had a hide, so A, I could do hatmana with it, because it's not mosif hevel, and B, it's not muksa. Now, gizei tzemer, we move on to the next part of the Mishnah. What about wool? Ein metaltalin osan. So here's an interesting part when it comes to the wool. Wool, right, let's assume it's dry wool, right? It's got to be. So it doesn't add heat, so it's a davar hamamid, but it's not a davar hamosif. You could do hatmana, but it's muksa. Now, why is it muksa? So I show you Rashi. Rashi writes, a metaltalin osan, de muksa zhein letavos ula areg. Because what I'm going to do with the wool is I need to spin it, and I need to weave it. So what we could say is it's muksa machmas iser, meaning that its primary use is for malacha, to do a malacha with it, tavuyin and ariga. So therefore, it is muksa. So now, we're at an impasse, right? What a great intersection, where I'm going to do hatmana with the wool, but it's muksa. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my pot, I won't spill it. I'm going to take my pot, and I'm going to put it in a box, but on the bottom of the box is going to be wool, on the side of the box is going to be wool, and on the very top, over the lid, is going to be wool as well. And so now, here comes an interesting part of the discussion, where, that's fine, I could do hatman in such a manner, it's only preserving the heat of this cup, much like the cup right now is preserving the heat of the liquid inside, it's preserving the heat of the cup, but it's muksa. So now what we're going to have to figure out is, how do I get to the contents of the cup? Such a simple question. And this is what the Mishnah now is going to deal with. So ketzad hu osa. So what do you do? So a couple strategies provided here in the Mishnah. Number one, no tells a kisui veheino flos. So the first suggestion of the Mishnah, we'll call it the Tanakama, is just simply take off the lid. Now, when you take off the lid, so yeah, in other words, your hand may touch the wool, but I'm not reaching for the wool, I'm reaching for the lid. And now when I take off the lid, so obviously whatever wool is going to be on the lid is going to slide off the lid. Veheino flos. Good. An important Rashi over here. Now, Rashi over here says, notel kisui. Okay, You see the Rashi on the Mishnah, notel kisui. So you take the lid off. Shel keder sheyesh toras kli aleha. Now the lid is a kli. So the lid you can for sure move. The lid is not muksa. V'alfa gav shehin aleha lo ich batlan. Now Rashi acknowledges, there's wool on top of the lid, but Rashi says, but so what? Delo nasis basis lahen shein asui ela lechasos kedera. One important Rashi. Rashi over here says, you know, you could have made this argument. Your argument could be, look, there's wool on top of the lid. So you know what the lid is? It's a basis ladavar ha'asr. You remember we learned just a couple of days ago, the whole concept of basis. It takes us back to Mem Zion, where the Gemara introduces us to the concept, where if I have something that supports muksa, the item underneath it now is a basis, it's a base, and therefore you're not allowed to move that which is underneath.
But did you intend to keep it on base for 24 hours?
Okay, so...
That's the thing.
Okay, so I'm not sure about your point, but I'll just clarify what Rashi's point is. Rashi's point is that in order for something to be a base, that has to be its intended purpose going into Shabbos. Meaning this lid here in question was not intended to support and hold the wool above it. That's not the purpose of a lid. The functional purpose of a lid, says Rashi, is to cover the pot. So even though, yes, there happens to be wool on top of the lid, for the purposes and definition of basis, that's incidental. That's not the primary purpose. And so therefore, in the world of basis, in the rules of basis has to be, I'm expressly intending that this item underneath is supporting the item above it. So Rashi says, that's why the lid does not qualify for the rules of basis, for the terms of basis, and so therefore you're allowed to move the lid. Now what about the fact that the muksa will move? Okay, totalman atzad. That's indirect movement of muksa.
The fact that they talk about the hides, would it have been better just to put the wool on the sides and the hides on the top, then you'd never have the issue with this potential muksa?
Wait one second. Give me a moment. So that is now strategy number one. So strategy number one is just simply to lift the lid, and the wool's going to move to the side. Rav Elazar ben Azariah omer kupa mata al tzidav notel shemiyitov eino yochol lahachzir. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah gives another strategy. Now, is he arguing with the Tanakama? So we'll see. We'll talk more about that later on. And he says is that now, look, this is in a box, right? In other words, how do I do atmana? I take my pot, I put it in a box. Again, I line the box. Wool on the bottom, wool on the sides, wool on the top. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, what you're going to now do is you're going to take the whole apparatus, you're going to tilt it on the side, and by doing that, obviously spilling out the contents of the pot for whatever you want to take. Okay, now. Now, well, just give me a moment. The reason why Rav Elazar ben Azariah says that is because if I were now to take the pot out, what I have now obviously is a hole. Nature hates a vacuum. You've heard that? So now what's going to happen is that the hole is going to collapse. And now what's going to happen is that I'm going to want to put it back in to the box with the wool. The problem is I don't have a hole. And then my next temptation is going to be to simply create a hole. But as we've already discussed, the wool is muksa. I can't create the hole. So therefore, tilt the whole thing over. Okay, your question is a valid question. What about the wool on the top? Again, stay tuned. All this is going to be discussed. Yeah.
I'm very unhappy that the wool is muksa. Because everything in a pot is also had to be made.
A pot is a kli. It's a utensil. The wool is not a kli. The wool is not a utensil. And so therefore, it's a raw product. And as we discussed, raw materials are muksa. Stones are muksa. Wool is muksa. It's only finished items which are not going to be muksa. Okay. Those are the general rules. Those are the general guidelines of muksa. And the chachamim say, no, it's fine. Take it out and put it back in again. What about the hole that's created? What about the collapsing of the hole? What about you're going to want to move the wool? So again, so much to discuss over here. The Gemara will discuss this. Stay tuned for the Gemara's discussion. This is going to end up, all this discussion is going to take place tomorrow. So I'm teasing, but I'm telling you though, wait till tomorrow for that. We start with the Gemara, Yosef, Rabbi Yochanan ben Achinai, Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina bar Chama Gabayu. The Gemara describes now a group of Amoraim sitting together, three, Vikami Bayelahu. So the first topic of discussion was the following. Shlachim shal ba abai tanan aval shal uman kevin dekapit alai lo metatlan lahu odil moshe uman tanan bekol shekain shal ba abayis. Now we're talking about hides. Where are these hides right now? So, in other words, we can all agree the hides owned by you and me in our houses, right? This is what's called the shlachim shal ba abayis. So our hides in our house, they're clearly meant for use. Okay, why else would I have a hide in my house? Okay, I'm intending on using them. Cushion for the seat, perhaps something to lie down on. They clearly have a use and a function, and therefore those hides are certainly not muksa. That's a given. What is open for discussion, however, is the hides of an uman. The craftsman who spends the time now to cut the hide, to manufacture the hide, to work the hide, what about the hides there at the house of the tanner, or at the plant of the tanner? Are they mukso? So one argument you can make is the following. This is the Gemara's first argument. Kevan de kapit alayu lo mitatalin an lohu. They're makbid, meaning they don't want these hides to get dirty, right? And if you take a look at Rashi, aval shalom, and last Rashi on the page, shalom dos lamochran, they totally plan on selling them, kapit alayu, hilkach lo lemizga kami vei mitatalin osan. We perhaps can put this under the category of muksa machmas, chisar and kis. Meaning to the craftsman, they are super valuable because he wants to sell them, and so therefore they're muksa. That's one argument you can make. Or maybe our Mishnah was talking about the hides even when they're in the house of the manufacturer of the tanner. So this is the question. I'm the Rav Yonasan ben Elazar, Mistav Shal Bala Bais Tanan, Avas Shal Oman Kapit Alayhu. So Rav Yonasan ben Elazar offers an opinion, and he says, I think that the Mishnah is only limited to hides in the house of the Bala Bais, not the Uman. He is particular about it, therefore they are muksa in the tannery. So I'm the Rabbi Chanina bar Chama, Kacham Rav Yishma bar Rav Yossi. So Rabbi Chanina bar Chama quotes Rabbi Yishma bar Rav Yossi, and Rav Yishma bar Yossi says the following on the top of the next Amud, Abba Shalcha Hava V'Amar, I'm sorry, whose father was a tanner, meaning Rav Yossi had an occupation. He was a tanner. And, so obviously all of his hides were hides of an uman, V'Amar, and he said, Havu Shlachim V'Neshev Aleim. And even though he was a tanner, and even though his hides were meant for sale, but nevertheless, he said to his son, do me a favor. Take one of the hides from the shop. I want to sit down on something comfortable. Go bring the hides over. So you see that the tanners were not that particular, and they would even sit on their own product. And so you see that it could be that that even the hides of a tanner are not muksa on Shabbos. Now, this story that takes place, Rashi, strangely enough, says that this story took place during the week. Meaning the Gemara is trying to make a point that they're not muksa on Shabbos. So now the Gemara doesn't tell us when the story took place, during the week or on Shabbos, but Rashi says, it's a one word Rashi, va'amar b'chol. This occurred during the week. Now, but still the point of the Gemara is still being made, meaning that the tanners are not that particular over it. But nevertheless, though, it is strange from Rashi's standpoint why he feels that we know the story took place during the week. Take a look at the top Tosfos on the other side of the Amud, where Tosfos disagrees with Rashi. Okay, it is a...
Why can't we assume that he actually was Shabbat, and this guy designated before Shabbat that I'm going to use as a regular?
Okay, right, you're right. In other words, correct. It's not totally compelling, the evidence, but it's, you know, it is evidence. V'amrei v'yir shlach v'nei shevalein. Meitzvei, the Gemara challenges, nesan shal balabayis, metalton osan, v'shal umanei metalton osan. So now we're talking about wooden boards. Obviously not hides. Our discussion is about hides. But you'll see how the brisa will develop. So if it's wooden boards, if it's owned by a Bala Bais, so I went to Lowe's, okay, or Home Depot. Okay, I understand. My friends in Atlanta are going to get sensitive. So the Nisan Shel Baal Bayis. So if I go and I buy the board, so in my house they're not muktzah. So Vishal Uman, however, if they're by the manufacturer, by the seller, so ain metaltel, son, they are muktzah. Now with a machshava, so they are not going to be muktzah, like Ben described just a moment ago. But the Gemara says, okay, but that's not our discussion. Shanin and Sarm to capitalize. The Gemara says, okay, but those are boards of wood, beams of wood. So you could say that the manufacturer is particular about the boards of wood, but we're talking about hides. Tashmaor is bein avunim and shein avunim, muta l'taltalan b'shabbos. When it comes to hides, continues the Braisa, whether they are worked over, whether they're not worked over, meaning either it's a raw hide or a processed hide, either way, muta l'taltalan b'shabbos, you'll have to move it on Shabbos. So lo amru avunim l'inyan tuma, now bavad. Now as far as what the processing of hides do, is that it makes it, the hide, susceptible to tumah. Meaning once the hide goes to the processing of a hide, actually we're going to talk about it more in the seventh perek. There's a salting, there's a pressing down of the hide. Okay. So anyway, the point is, however, is that the only difference between processed and unprocessed hides is regarding tumah. But anyway, my love, lo shna shel baal habayis, lo shna shel oman. Now, even though we made a distinction in the braisa, that was only vis-a-vis processing versus not processing, and that was only vis-a-vis tumah. But there was no distinction made in the braisa regarding whether the hides were of a baal habayis or whether they were of an oman. So, lo shna shel oman, lo shna shel baal habayis, lo shna oman, my. Ein metaltelin. So the Gemara says, so now, the, okay, I'm sorry, lo shna shel baal habayis, lo shna shel oman. Okay, sorry. So, lo, the Gemara says, maybe not. Shel baal habayis, aval shel oman, mai, ein metaltelin. So the Gemara suggests, well, maybe what the way we could read the Braisa is that the Braisa's allowance of moving hides is only when they're in the house of a baal habayis. So the Gemara says, ihachi, if that's how you want to understand the Braisa, ha did nivel amar navudim elin yintum abavad. Well, then the Braisa try to make a distinction. And you know we do this all the time. Meaning if we're going to make a distinction in the Braisa, why don't we make the sharpest distinction possible, which would be liflag v'lisnei b'didei b'medvar m'mishal baal habayis v'mishal oman lo, where we could simply say that there's a difference between hides in the house of the consumer, the baal habayis, or hides in the house of the seller. So the Gemara says, lo, kula baal habayis kamari. The Gemara says, well, maybe the Braisa didn't make that distinction because the entire Braisa from beginning to end was talking about when it's in the house of the baal habayis. So for then the Braisa to move and discuss, but the hides in the house of the Uman, the Braisa is just simply not even discussing that. So then for the Braisa to make such a distinction would be totally out of context of the Braisa. The Gemara ends the entire discussion, kitanai. So again, we all know that once the hide gets to the house of the consumer, of the baal habayis, it's not muktzah. That we know. The only point for discussion and debate is when the hide is in the house of the uman, of the tanner. And the Gemara punctuates the whole discussion with, you know what? It's a machlokus. It's a machlokus tanaim already. Orishal baal habayis metaltan osan, vishal uman ein metaltan osan. Tanakama says that when the hides are in the house of the tanner, they are muktzah. And again, we'll go back to what Rashi said previously, because it's muksa machmas chisaron kis. He wants to sell it. It's valuable to him. And Rav Yossi Omer, echazev echazev metaltan osan. Rav Yossi says, no, whether they're in the baal habayis' house, whether they're in the tannery, it is not muksa, and you're allowed to move it. Okay, so what's the conclusion? The conclusion is that the hides in the baal habayis are not muksa, and it hides in the tannery, machlokas. Next. Next point of discussion. Remember the bottom of the previous Amud had a discussion amongst the three chachamim. Let's call them late generation Tanaim. Now, discussion number two. How do Yosef Vikami Bailahu? Okay, and now we get to take a macro look at Masechta Shabbos, meaning our discussions usually in the Gemara revolve around microscopic issues, right? The meaning, just fine detail of halacha. Now what we're going to do is we're going to pull back and we're going to take now a larger look at the Malachas of Shabbos. A very basic Gemara coming up. Meaning we know, we don't know this yet, we haven't learned this yet inside the Masechta, but Daf Ayin Beis, that there are 39 Malachas of Shabbos. Ayin Gimel, sorry. Right, 40 minus 1 says the Mishnah. And we go through all of them. And these are the Avos Malachas, the main categories of Malachas. The question on the table is, how do we know? Where does it come from? Nowhere in the Torah does it actually go through all 39 Malachas. The Torah actually only goes through and outlines one, maybe two Malachas in the Torah. The one that's expressly written in the Torah is?
Fire.
Lo sevaru esh b'chol moshosechem b'yom HaShabbos. Okay, so that's one that's expressly written in the Torah. Another one that you could tease out of the Torah is caring, right? Caring from one domain to another, very good. And that's it. And there are 39 malachas, and how do we arrive at 39 malachas? Good. Basic question. That's discussion number two. How do you ask for kami bailu? How do none of us malachas arbeim chasar achas can I get me? So how is that? How do we get to the number 39? Amalu Rabbi Chanina Bar Chama Keneged Avodah Shebe Mishkan. So answer number one, which I feel is like the popular answer, the one that everybody knows, is Avodah Shebe Mishkan. Meaning what it took, what was a necessary step-by-step process of constructing the Mishkan. And it's these 39 malachos that were required in the construction of the Mishkan. Amalu Rabbi Yonasan Bar Laza Kachama Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yossi Ben Lakunya Keneged Malacha Milachto umalaches shebetorah. Well, you know how you get to the number 39? Take a sefer Torah and count up the number of times in the Torah that it says malacha, malachto, or the word malaches, and you're going to get to arba'im chaser achas, you're going to get to 39 times. Now, do me a favor, please, homework tonight. Okay? Open up your chumash, take out a highlighter. And actually highlight the number of times in the Torah that the Torah either says malacha, malachto, or malaches. Now what you will find, I'm going to write spoiler alert, what you will find, I cannot claim I've done it, but what you will find is that there are more than 39. Okay, and that obviously poses a problem, that's an issue. The Rishonim obviously are bothered by this, it's an obvious question, it's a glaring issue with the Gemara, and okay. It's an issue. No neat answers to answer up the problem, but this is now offering number two of the Gemara in terms of how we got to the number 39. Now, by Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef says as follows. Look, there are a couple times where the Torah uses the word malachas and malachto, and it doesn't mean work in the literal sense. I'll give you an example. V'yavo abayis alasos malachto. Coming up a couple weeks from now in Shabbos, is Parshas Vayeshev. Yosef goes back to the home of Ashes Potiphar, to do his work. Now, you know Rashi over there in the Pasuk? It could be that the Torah was speaking Belashon Sagi Nahor. The Torah was speaking cleanly, meaning that his intent to go home was not to do Malacho, but to engage in an act of promiscuity with Ashes Potiphar. So if that's the correct interpretation of the Torah, which the Gemara is going to suggest in just a moment, so then that can't count towards Malachas Shabbos. Because even though we use the word Malachto, but that's not the definition of the Malachto. Which, by the way, may answer our previous question of there's more than 39, so what you're going to have to do, this is going to take work, is deduct all the Malachtos which are not meant in its literal sense. So Mimignano Olam. So is that part of the count or is that not part of the count? So Amalei Abai Velesi Sefer Torah Velimne. So Abai says to his Rebbe Rav Yosef, why not just open up a Sefer Torah? And why not simply count? So Milo Amar Rabba Babrachana Rav Yochanan Lozazam Mishamat Sheviyo Sefer Torah Manum. There was another occasion where there was a debate about lettering of the Torah. And the answer was very simple. Take out your Sefer Torah. And just simply count. What's the problem? Laziness? Okay, right? The Amorai and the Tanaim were not lazy. So just take out a Sefer Torah. So, and where is this Gemara? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, I'm not really sure where this Gemara is, but perhaps the Gemara in Kiddushin, the end of the first parak. Anyway, Amar Lei Ki Kamisafkali Mishum Dechsiv Amalacha Malacha Isa Dayam. Well, there is another place in the Torah where the Torah uses the word Malacha, And again, over there, I'm not sure if we're supposed to take that literally. Meaning, malachto haita dayam, does that mean actual malacha, or does it just simply mean the job's done? So, mimenyanuhu. So now, basically, this is an accounting issue. And the accounting issue over here is, look, one of these is to be counted, I don't know which one, so let's simply, in other words, it's just a question of, it's accounting. One is in, one is out. I don't know which one is in and which one is out. So the Hakaman Da'am La'asot Rachav Nechnas, and maybe we'll use the pasuk of Malach Ha'isa Dayam. That will be counted. And then what about the pasuk by Yosef? Not to be taken literally, meaning like I described earlier. Or maybe the Yosef pasuk is meant to be taken literally, meaning the pshat, the correct pshat is, literally, he went home to do his work. And maybe the pasuk in Shmos is talking about simply the job is done. Teku, the Gemara says, okay, good. It's a good question, and I don't know how to resolve which pasuk is in and which pasuk is out. Okay, we'll stop over here. A little bit more to go, but the bell signifies it's over, and we will continue tomorrow. Mirza Shah.